Town Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Jared Goff, Jordan Love, Baker Mayfield, and Brock Purdy. The cream of the crop in the NFC. Those three quarterbacks are standing between Brock and a trip to the Super Bowl in his first year, first full season as a starter. Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles in the Sacramento Bee joins us. Chris, how you doing?
I'm outstanding. How are you guys?
We are good and glad to hear it. Chris, let's start here. Big picture, what was your biggest surprise of the weekend? Which game surprised you the most? Which outcome surprised you the most?
I don't know that there was a super surprising outcome in any of them. I thought, going back to Saturday, I thought it was a little bit crazy that the Browns were favored with Joe Flacco as quarterback going to Houston. I know Flacco had been a good story this year, but he had thrown a lot of interceptions, and there's a lot, a very big sample of him not playing good quarterback consistently for years on end. So Houston taking it to Cleveland the way they did wasn't super surprising. Didn't love the Dolphins going into a cold weather game, given all the injuries that they've had defensively and how bad their offensive line has played. Didn't think they had a great chance in Kansas City. I did think Pittsburgh, with Mike Tomlin maybe being on the outs there, we'll see how that turns out. But I did think they would put up a better fight in Buffalo, a team that's been hit or miss throughout the season. And I didn't have high expectations for Philadelphia against Tampa Bay. Anybody who's watched Philadelphia since that 49ers game would know that this hasn't been a particularly good team in the second half of the season. And I was in Philadelphia, Thursday and Friday covering Kings. And typically when a big-time NFL team like the Eagles are in the playoffs, the city would be buzzing with positivity and excitement. There wasn't, I didn't see people in Eagles gear anywhere. I didn't see much around the city in terms of a lot of like Eagle signage or a lot of pride in the team recently. And I think last night was an embodiment of why, given the way they lost. So, I wish I had a good answer for you that something like super shocked me. And I'm not trying to pretend like I'm some super smart guy here, but like there was nothing from that first round that really stood out as shocking to me. But it was pretty interesting. I did think the Rams and Lions game was fascinating from all the story angles and everything like that, with Stafford going back to the place where he played for so long. But that result wasn't really surprising either. It wouldn't have surprised me if the Rams had won that game. But the Lions winning and now having a pretty clear path to the NFC Championship game, should they beat Tampa Bay, is surprising in the macro sense, looking back at what we thought the Lions would be a couple of years ago when Dan Campbell first took that job.
Well, Chris, the only one, and then I'll hand it over to my guy Watkins. What about the Cowboys, though, and the Packers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, it was surprising in the sense of how bad it was. It wasn't surprising in the sense that the Cowboys blew a playoff game, and Mike McCarthy didn't have his team ready in a playoff game, and Dak Prescott didn't play all that great in the playoffs. Dak, I think, is what, 2-5? I'd have to double check that number, but I think he's 2-5 in the playoffs as a starter. And obviously, wins are not a quarterback stat necessarily, but I think at some point you have to look at the quarterback when his performances in the postseason have been what they've been. It's fair to criticize Dak and wonder if he's going to be a guy who can ever win a team the Super Bowl. But yeah, I mean, it was surprising in that the Cowboys fell down 27-0, but it wasn't surprising to me that they would blow a game like that. I think that's sort of been, Mike McCarthy's MO is to have a disappointing performance in the playoffs, whether it be in the first round or the second round. I felt like it was coming at some point. And so, being that lopsided was definitely surprising, but not so much the result.
Chris, there's been a lot of talk about, why the Rams were the big fear for the 49ers, with Sean McVay's familiarity with Kyle Shanahan and how they do things. And I know the Rams are obviously in the Niners division, so there's tons of familiarity organization-wide. But there's still a good bit of familiarity from Matt LaFleur with Shanahan in their time. I know, every time they show that the Washington coordinator graphic. Matt LaFleur is one of the names on there. So how much familiarity do you know that Matt LaFleur has with Shanahan? And is that something that should still be a concern like it was with McVay?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I think the big concern with playing the Rams was probably just the Matt Stafford, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp dynamic, right? Like, I think you could make a case that Matt Stafford is probably the most dangerous quarterback in the NFC just from a pure talent perspective and somebody who's given the 49ers problems in the past. When it comes to familiarity, the old adage, it's a cliche, but I do believe in it to a certain extent. It's not always about the X's and O's. It's about the Jimmys and Joes, right? Like, I think the scheme familiarity will only hold up so much in comparison to how talented these teams are, right? And I think the 49ers have a very clear talent advantage over the Packers and any other team they play. So even if, Sean McVay and the Packers have a good idea of what the 49ers like to run offensively, and even if the Packers defense practices against a very similar scheme and what the Packers run, I don't know that it's necessarily going to help them, beat Trent Williams or George Kittle setting the edge, right? Like, or tackling Christian McCaffrey. So I think familiarity can obviously help. But ultimately, it's going to come down to the players on the field. And I just don't know that the Packers have the players on the field, particularly on the defensive side, to slow down the 49ers. And that's not to say it won't be a competitive game or it won't be a close game, because I do think that's a possibility because, Jordan Love, I mean, he was excellent in Dallas, and he's been, statistically one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL over the second half of the season. The Packers started 3-6, but they only lost two games over their final eight. And so that's a team, and that's the same record that the 49ers had over a similar stretch. So that's a team that is kind of unknown. Like, they're an unknown quantity in terms of, like, how good can Jordan Love be? Like, what is his ceiling? Because we don't know. There just isn't a sample size of him playing in the playoffs. So I do think the 49ers are going to have, like, an appropriate fear. But going back to your question, I think it's more like this game is going to come down to, in my opinion, just the talent disparity on the field between the Niners and Packers. And I don't know that the familiarity is really going to play all that big of a role just because the 49ers have such a distinct advantage there.
Talking to Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. Chris, switching over to Kings, you were in Philly and – correct me if I'm wrong, but you were not in Milwaukee, but we know you were obviously watching the game. How should mm-hmm. Kings fans feel about the Kings right now, if you want to look at that big picture or just with what happened and the way that game ended in Milwaukee? They came out. They didn't lay down. They had an opportunity to win. There was a lot of fight. It had the makings of game of the year and some missed free throws and maybe a questionable decision at the end of the game. And after all the dust settles, you walk away with another L against an elite team in the East.
Yeah, I think the Kings have proven this year to be a team that can certainly handle business against teams that they're sort of on equal footing with and bad teams, right? But I think there's a consistency gap when it comes to playing up to some of the elite teams. And even teams, like Philadelphia on Friday not having Joel Embiid, and Philadelphia taking it to Sacramento in a pretty substantial way. And it's hard to say on a long road trip. It's hard to read too much into it because it was the Kings' third game in four nights and their fourth city of the week and all of those things. And that's not an excuse because every NBA team deals with things like that. But, the Kings were 0-6 last year against Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Boston. And those are obviously the top three teams in the East last year, and they're the top three teams in the East this year. And there's a certain physicality that those teams play with, particularly on the defensive end. And Mike Brown has been trying to get his team to play with that type of physicality throughout the season because that's really ultimately the key to them improving defensively, is just playing with that physicality and not fouling. And those other teams do that. And a lot of that's personnel, right? The Kings don't have a roster loaded with top-tier defenders in the same way that some of these Eastern powers are constructed. But I just think that the real differentiating factor with the Kings and these other elite teams, particularly those in the East, is just how they play defensively. And until until they become a consistent top 10 level defensive team, we're gonna see them vacillate between, you know, like they'll be a playoff team for sure because their offense is good enough and they have two all-stars in De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis, and Keegan Murray is an emerging talent who could end up being an all-star caliber player down the road. But there just hasn't been that consistency on the defensive end that makes them a real contending team yet. And look, if they want to be in the playoff mix, they might not have to make drastic changes to improve their defense because their offense is good enough. But if they want to win multiple playoff series and consistently get to the Western Conference Finals and throw their hat in the ring for a trip to the NBA Finals, then they're just going to have to improve defensively because we've seen year in and year out, it's generally the teams that are top five, top 10, both offensively and defensively, that really contend for championships. And the Kings just aren't there yet on the defensive end. And so, you know, we'll see with the trade deadline upcoming if there's a move that they can make or if they're just going to bank on internal growth like we sort of saw with them last year and not deciding against making a substantial move and instead just, you know, getting Kessler Edwards and then seeing if they can get growth from the guys that they have. But to me, it's all about defense, and it's what Mike Brown talks about all the time, and I'm right there with him.
Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. Chris, thank you as always, and hopefully we will be talking next week about the Niners and a W, and hopefully as well the Kings take care of business tonight in Phoenix.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
All righty, got to get to a break. When we get back, are you tired about hearing about Pascal Siakam? Well, too bad, because there's more news. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Thank you again to Chris Biederman of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee for joining us. The only surprise to Chris was the Cowboys game, but not that they lost, but just how they lost. And what happens next? We gave it to the Cowboys a good bit at the beginning of the show. The Eagles are in another spot. And, oof, you know, a lot of people, I think I've kind of fixed my brand, if you will, as a former, some people thought I was a Brock Purdy hater. I was never a Brock Purdy hater. And a big reason I would say, hey, I don't know why you feel like that, is because the same thing I was saying about Brock Purdy, who had a smaller sample size, I was saying about Jalen Hurts, okay? And I like Jalen Hurts. I think he carries himself the right way. I love his story. I love a good origin story. I love someone who's kind of been an underdog their career. But that was one season, and how the seasons lined up, they had no choice but to pay him. The Eagles did. But I was not sure that you right. have your guy for the next 5 to 10 years with Jalen Hurts just off of one good season. We've seen guys have good seasons before. So when I said the same thing about Brock Purdy, I'm not a Brock Purdy hater or a Jalen Hurts hater, but I just thought both of them needed to show me more, and Jalen Hurts did not show me very much this season. It just the way things worked last season, and we'll see what happens. You know, you lose Steichen, and now all of a sudden you have a raw. We talked about the rah-rah guys. You had a rah-rah guy in Sirianni. What do they do moving forward? But just the way they played offensively, I just felt like, again, man, if you're an Eagles fan, you better hope you get this Super Bowl. And when he fumbled and we knew the Chiefs were going to eventually get it done, I thought, I just don't see NFL teams not catching up to whatever this is.
Sure.
What is the identity of this?
Yeah.
He's not quick enough to scramble. It's these designed runs to where last season, I believe they had one of the best offensive lines, mm-hmm. and then you play off of the design runs, and you get those long throws from him to A.J. Brown and to Devontae, and you get Goddard in the mix as well. But it just didn't feel like this is something that is you got about 3-4 years of this offense that's going to look electric. It just felt like they had a good season.
Yeah,
and this season, They squeaked by. Their point differential was terrible. They're barely winning games. Yep. A lot of people called them, no offense, Chris, the Vikings of last season.
That's right.
And now they're done. And look, don't be surprised if the Eagles go ahead and take somebody in the fifth, sixth round here, just in case. Just in case. And I know they gave...
Sure. They put a lot of stock in the backup quarterback.
Right. You have to give Jay... And maybe he was banged up all season. I don't know. You're going to go into next season with Jalen Hurts. That is...
1,000%.
But if this doesn't look right next season, you got A.J. Brown. I don't know. There was a whole thing with Goddard talking to Jalen Hurts yesterday when he was blowing somebody out. Was he talking to Jalen Hurts or was he talking to somebody next to Jalen Hurts?
It looked like Jalen Hurts to me. Jalen Hurts looked like he was getting talked to.
AJ Brown has removed all of his Eagles posts from his social media. He didn't even play. He claimed it was the focus on the playoffs, but brother, you weren't even playing one. And number two,
I have to focus on the playoffs, so I'm going to go Eagle deep stuff. Into my Instagram
but
to delete everything.
Why only Eagles stuff? You didn't just shut down your account then. So I think it's a mess out there.
I don't know if you saw it. Jason Kelce retired.
It's
a pretty big piece.
That is a huge piece. He's going to focus on his podcasting. Of course. Okay. And doing that with his brother. So it's a mess out there in Eaglesville. Yeah. I will push back on this, though. And Niners fans, you were probably enjoying me for the last 5 minutes, but I don't know how much you're going to enjoy me now. I don't think that the Niners broke the Eagles.
No.
I don't think that the Niners broke the Eagles. I think that the Eagles broke themselves, or just the war of attrition broke the Eagles, and they had that gauntlet.
I mean, and they were fighting. Like you said, I mean, their point differential was trash. They were winning every single game, one score, and pretty much winning it by getting these tush pushes that were incredibly, not fortunate, but,
they couldn't even do that last night. That's when I knew it was cooked.
That's how you know it's done. Yeah.
Do you think the Niners exposed them, though, at the very least?
But
expose them to what? Yeah.
That, like, it's their mediocrity?
No, I wouldn't think so.
We all...
Because they were 9-1 going in, and it's like...
I think if anything, it was the idea that the Eagles could muck it up with anybody and hang around. And when the Niners came to town and do what they did, it was, maybe the Eagles just aren't very good.
Isn't that exposing them?
I would say maybe that if I would give the Niners credit for breaking their championship spirit. I think at that point, the Eagles realized when they got beat down that way, I would say maybe that made them realize,
breaking their championship spirit. What's the difference?
No, I don't think they didn't break them simply because, At the end of the day, I don't think that the Niners broke them because they were already if you're hanging on by a thread, were the Niners
they cut the last string or whatever.
I guess.
Who takes credit for opening the jar? Is it the guy who loosened it or is it the person who opened the jar?
Use your vocabulary.
But to me, the Niners came in with an axe to grind, so that's why I think a lot of people were willing to say, the Eagles, the Niners had something coming for them. Let's see what happens next. I think that gauntlet broke them. And that might be a cop-out, but I think that whole gauntlet broke them, and the Niners were part of that gauntlet.
Were the Niners the second one in the gauntlet?
Third.
I think they were third.
They were third because they had the Cowboys. Wait, they might have been fourth. They were in the gauntlet. It was they had Cowboys. Hold on, I got it up.
Niners
right
were coming off 10 days rest. Listen, I'm not saying, for the record.
Listen to this though.
Okay,
they had Cowboys. Then they had at Chiefs. Then they had the Bills, and then they had the Niners.
Okay, right.
So I'm not giving all of that to the Niners.
No. And I'm not saying the Niners broke the Eagles either. I think exposing is a probably better word to put. Like, they put what they really are. They showed the rest of America who the Eagles really were, and they weren't a complete team like they were the previous year, and they had all these problems, and the Niners, took it to them. They slowed them down in the beginning, and then the Niners just boat raced them.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think if they can score one of those two first drives, the
touchdowns.
Eagles, a touchdown.
Yes.
So let's call it now, it's 10-0 going into the second quarter.
Is their season completely different? I don't know. Not if we think they're ultimately
frauds. Not if the Niners
frauds.
Score six touchdowns in a row after. Like,
well, we'll never,
but does that happen?
But does that happen? Yeah. That's the whole point. But to me, it's hard for me to give all of that credit to the Niners because they had to go to Dallas, who also had an axe to grind.
Okay.
They made a lot of enemies along the way, Eagles did.
If you're going to make that hypothetical point, what if Brock Purdy doesn't break his elbow then?
That's fine.
It's like the same thing, right?
That's fine, though. I thought the Niners were going to win last season. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that gauntlet broke the Eagles, not the Niners.
They're just part of it.
If the Eagles had the Commanders or the Giants after that week, we're not saying that. They had to go to Dallas right after that.
Yeah. No.
I would say I agree with Nate in the sense of they exposed the national public to the fact that there's levels to it.
Yes.
And the Eagles weren't on that level.
Right. Right. Then the idea was maybe the Eagles can survive this, or the idea was the Eagles
or they'll
are
just
turn
do this,
it on.
Or they'll do it against the Niners too. Like their style of play is so imposing.
Yeah. Yes, they were either going to be able to muck it up,
Or
they were going to turn it on.
Yeah.
And
they mucked it up for themselves.
They mucked it up for themselves, and then they lost handedly to the Cowboys. And then at that point, it was over. If you want me to give the Niners credit, it's that, okay, the Eagles were hanging on because they barely beat the Cowboys. Don't forget, Dak had an opportunity to win game, and they blew
bounds,
that.
Right? Yeah.
They barely beat everybody. They were barely hanging on. They barely beat the Cowboys. They barely beat the Chiefs. They barely beat the Bills. And at that point, they had to look up and say, great, now the Niners are coming to town. Nobody thought that the Eagles were going to win that game. That's the reason why I pushed back. Nobody thought the Eagles were going to win that game. What happens next? The idea that you're going to come back and beat the Cowboys in Dallas after you had just beat the Cowboys not too long ago.
Are you saying no one thought the Eagles were going to beat the Niners?
I felt like everybody thought the Niners were going to come in there with an axe to
grind. I think because maybe you're in a bubble then. Because I felt like I felt like it was closer. I felt maybe 60-40 Niners favored.
Maybe. Oh yeah.
I think a lot of people were picking the Eagles. I was watching a lot of
But that's the thing. Like you're a Niners fan. Everybody just wants to be an underdog though. You know what I mean? I'm not going to go back and...
Well, I gave the Niners 60, so they're the overdog.
Well, now all of a sudden I'm hearing... And that's what just kind of annoys me, to be completely honest. Because now I'm seeing, oh my gosh, and people are going to be content creators. I get it. Oh my gosh, one narrative I'm seeing is that Jordan Love is hot. And I'm just like, Niners, you're favored by 9.5 points.
It's a lot.
Just be a normal fan.
But now you go so far the other way down, I can't even make like a point like this without...
How?
Well, you're saying that anything like positive kind of, it feels like that. Anything positive in the Niners way is like an excuse or like they're looking for.
No, I'm saying the Niners should go in and take care of business. There are Niners fans trying to position themselves and position a narrative that I honestly think these content creators are making up things.
Yeah, okay?
They are literally making up things.
But I think it like crowds everyone else's mind and kind of like makes them think a certain way, like bring so much hate and like, Brock Purdy does have pretty great stats, but you're looking at some guys who inflate them and do crazy things, and it's hard to give Brock credit for the things that he's done because you're seeing people nitpick these weird little stats that make you think a certain way.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah, so then it's like a negative feedback loop where you're just like, okay, worse and worse. Yeah, it's not healthy.
So now the whole thing is, and look, the Packers are hot. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to disrespect them, but I'm just saying this idea that I don't know if it's the Michael Jordan or the Mamba mentality that fans have to try to turn this into bulletin board material because user 1234 said that Jordan Love was better than Brock Purdy. I don't get it. They're 9.5. They're favored by 9.5. They're the favorites.
Yeah.
Get it done. There's no underdog. There's no way to flip this. You're at home. You have the better team. You have the better roster. Get it done.
That I will say that's moved a point, I believe, since opening, so you could see where the money's go. Like people like the Packers more. No, 10.5, I think it opened at. So now it's at 9.5. So you could see where the public is kind of thinking.
Yeah.
You know,
I know we got to get to a break.
Yeah, we do.
We got to get to a break. When we get back, are you tired about hearing about Pascal Siakam? Well, there's more, and we got it. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. We'll be right back.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
We're back. Sources, murmurs, reports. Pascal Siakam. I really just want him. I just wish I could just. You remember that movie with Adam Sandler? It was actually kind of sad. Click.
Oh yeah.
He's got the remote.
That's actually seen that movie.
The sad movie, funny,
oh,
but
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, that's right. It does kind of turn into like an existential crisis.
He ends up in a different universe.
Right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I feel like I want to fast forward into after the trade deadline. I do.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a lot of fun once we get to
yeah.
February 8th, but I'm so tired of these.
Could
reports.
Be a crazy week. That's heading into
I
the Super Bowl.
I hope it is, man.
Got trade deadline.
Right, we might be on the road.
Look out.
Hey,
look
we might
out.
Be on the road. Look you know, out. We'll talk. Now. We'll talk, but we might be in Vegas. Anybody want to come say hello to the boys? But you got to get there, Niners, and you got to beat one of, I'm going to get the list back because it really is just hilarious to me. Jared Goff, okay?
Yep.
Got to be Jared Goff,
yep.
Young Baker Mayfield,
yep.
Or Jordan Love. These guys stand between you and number six, Niners.
No excuses.
None.
There's absolutely none. There's a single excuse. Come on. What are you going to say? Oh, the Lions are actually pretty good. The Lions? What? Y'all? That's like if the Kings just last year made the NBA final. You can't have a team that just got their first playoff win since, what, 1992? Mm-hmm. You can't have that team roll in when the Niners have gone through their own gauntlet of trying to get to the Lombardi Trophy. You can't just have the Lions skip the line like that. You got to take care of business.
You have to.
At the very least, I mean, of course, the mission is win, but it's even like if you don't even get there, y'all, that's
a problem.
No,
and they just
can't have that.
They extended, you know, they extended the front office. They extend Shanahan, all these things, right? So you feel good about it. Okay, Jed York, I think that's saying a lot to say, hey, you should probably get it done right now. And I'm just seeing here on the Sack chat to
slander forever.
Beamer, Beams, or Beamly. They really are getting on deck with that. Here we go.
Dude, that thing.
Here we go.
Crazy.
And somebody,
I
read something.
That.
Here we go hits different when you're down by 30.
It sure does.
Because
yeah.
Where are we going, Dak?
He didn't, yeah. He was like, do I really have to keep saying this? Because
right.
Feel like we're going
it's just
there.
A bad one when you're. When you're not winning, and I really am so intrigued as to what the Cowboys are going to do. But yeah, John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, you got extended. You got to face this is the best quarterback group to wear, and it's elite over there in the AFC. We know
it's tough,
but these aren't even this is so bad. They found quarterbacks that Steven Ruiz actually had Brock Purdy ranked higher than. That's how easy it's going to be yep. for the Niners. And Steven Ruiz can't stand Brock.
Yeah.
And the collection of quarterbacks to get to the Super Bowl, Steven Purdy. Ruiz actually had Brock ranked higher than. This is incredible.
That's crazy.
It cannot
what are the odds?
Line up
oh
any
my God. It
better.
Could, it could not. I did not
for
know
the
that.
Niners.
That's incredible.
Now, maybe he had somebody in front of him.
Those sound like guys
but
who
I don't
you
know
would
who
probably
it would be,
have to.
Right? Right?
Maybe
would,
Jared Goff.
Maybe
he's
Jared,
big
Goff.
Jared Goff.
I don't think it would be Jordan Love. So, you got to get it. You got to get it taken care of.
At least get there, man. I know that's not the end goal. But, you know, again, when you have this crop of quarterbacks here, there's no excuse to at least getting there. Again, on the AFC, you got a much tougher list. You got Lamar, you got Pat Mahomes, you got CJ Stroud, you got Josh Allen. I get how maybe, again, lifting that Lombardi trophy is the toughest hurdle to get over. But, man, if you're not at least getting to the dance this year,
there's
I mean,
a problem.
You can't – next year the Niners can go 14-2, and you're not going to believe them until they actually get it done. So, I mean, that's been where they're at, but especially now that everything has lined up so perfectly for them, out my ears. You know, now that everything is lined up perfectly for them, mm-hmm. there's no excuses, man. You got to get it done, and if you can't get it done this year, then I just don't want to hear it until you're raising that trophy.
No, and I think some Niners fans are already there.
Oh, absolutely.
But
absolutely.
I would say first full season with Brock, he's been healthy. Everybody's been relatively healthy. I think that this, to your point, I think some people are already there, but I think a lot of more Niner fans would be there if they don't get it done this season.
I Niner fans don't want me to say this. I probably shouldn't say it because it's a bad omen. But like, I honestly think that they're at the point now to where there's some fail safes in there to where I still feel like, you know, I'm not going to say Brock Purdy goes down the rest of the playoffs, but Sam Darnold should even be able to get a playoff game now. Done here. Okay?
Why are you
I'm
doing
seriously
that?
Like the amount of talent that is on this roster.
What are we
come
doing?
On, man. Come on. With the teams that are lined up in front
there.
Of them.
Maybe to get
that's
there.
What I'm
yeah,
saying. There's
there.
There's no excuses for having no success in
and
this
and on
playoff.
The flip side, you can't really say the same
got
for
all
Lamar.
The games at home.
Right. Look, it feels like Lamar, it's a down season for the AFC,
sure.
But you're still now Rashee Rice looks
right.
like the next
oh
coming
God.
Of Tyreek. Okay, so
looks like Jerry Rice.
But to Lamar's point, is, hey Lamar, who are you going to be? We compare.
It's
you
not
going
to get easier than
right,
this. To
if,
your
if,
point,
if there's Sabonis and there's a Jokic, right? Is it a situation to where Lamar is always just going to be the bridesmaid
right.
to Patrick Mahomes yep. and same with Josh Allen? I mean, you don't have to deal with Burrow this season, if not now, then
a
when?
New challenger has now entered the
with
arena. CJ
Stroud.
Two CJ
yeah.
Strouds in
and
the
that
building.
Team, and that team is only going to get better. So who knows how long they'll be around? And he looks legit. So at some point, you're going to have to figure this whole thing out. Want to get to this sound as we get back to NBA on Pascal Siakam and Shams now. This is just reminding me of a show. You know, we like MTV The Challenge.
We love it.
You know, you ever watch MTV The Challenge or Love Island, and these shows could probably be cut by about 40%
yes,
of the of the episodes. That's what I'm feeling like with this Pascal Siakam thing. The episodes are just, they're starting to pile
way too
up here.
Long,
just, it's
yeah.
just way too long.
Let's reaching hear, for storylines.
Yeah, let's hear from Shams in the newest update on Pascal.
My sense is that the Kings are going to take a measured approach ahead of the trade deadline. We're just about 3.5 weeks away from the trade deadline. So the Kings are going to be patient. I think they'll be measured. They're among the offers that Toronto has on the table potentially for Pascal Siakam. It's around Harrison Barnes and draft picks, a couple other salaries as well. But for the Kings, it's been about the timing of a deal. They wanted to get a deal done sooner than later and not have to wait. They want to bring in a player, whoever that player is, whether it's Siakam or anyone else, into the fold. And really build that chemistry that's necessary. And the other thing is framework. I'm told Toronto kind of, you know, when you ask for more late in the process, it changes the equation. It changes the framework. And when the Kings decided to pull out about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, it really made it so that it's really on the Raptors at this point to come back to them if a deal is going to get done. The Raptors continue to be engaged with teams on Siakam. The Indiana Pacers are one of the teams that they have been talking to over the last couple weeks. So the Siakam market still is ongoing. The Kings are there potentially, but only if Toronto wants to go back to them. But I think overall the Kings have a few targets and they're going to be measured overall.
Respectfully, that told me nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
We're just hearing the same things.
Yep.
And I'm sick of it, Chris.
I am too.
It's like Groundhog Day. Got to get to a break. When we get back, we react to the newest update on Pascal Siakam. And also, who else should you be targeting if you are Monty McNair? Siles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Niners injury report for Tuesday. Will not practice. Cleveland Farrell, Dre Greenlaw, Logan Ryan, limited. Eric Armstead and George Odom. Christian McCaffrey will be a full participant. Get it done. Get it done.
No excuses.
San Francisco 49ers. 916, this is interesting, getting back to the Tua conversation. This is a little bit different. I'm not probably, I don't fully agree, but I understand where the 916 is coming from. Because it's a fine line. And the 916 says, what Tua did, and if you're just now joining the show, thank you for joining us, but Tua asked for Patrick Mahomes' jersey literally right after, as they're doing the handshake after the game. And Mahomes, you can hear him basically mouth it and say, hey,
nah,
I'm, you know, this one's going to Tyreek, yada, yada, yada. So This is from the 916. What Tua did is exactly what drives me crazy with the Kings. They may not be asking to swap jerseys, but after a loss, I am tired of seeing all the dapping it up. I want to see our guys be upset about a loss. Gone are the days of Jordan and Kobe. Someone needs that killer mentality. That is from the 916. And that is the fine line to where I think I disagree with. I don't really mind dapping it up after the game.
I don't
game.
Think you have to be Jordan
I don't think,
and Kobe.
Yeah, I don't think that.
LeBron's done fine.
Well, did Jordan Steph's and Kobe not fine. Dap people up after the game?
I mean, general rule of thumb was those two were not nice people. Like, they weren't excited to do the dap up after. I mean, I'm sure there's definitely video of Kobe dapping people up.
The same thing
after
with LeBron. It's the sportsmanship question. Yeah.
Are
right?
you guys familiar with Jeff Teague's podcast he's been doing? Yeah. Recently, he said something about Kobe. Kobe trying to get him to come play for him. And Jeff's like, I don't want to play for that crazy person.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he doesn't, like, he didn't want it. Like, he was talking trash about Jeremy Lin. I think it was, like, right in front of his face to Jeff Teague. He's like, you stuck me with this guy? You didn't want to come to L.A.? Now I'm stuck with this guy? And right. It's like, that's psychotic.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, is that better? Is
I
that,
love right. Jeff is Teague. That
or I saw one, and it was LeBron against KD, I believe, because it's always a big deal when they face off against each other. Yeah. And I saw one thing, and again, it's the internet, so take it with a grain of salt. But essentially, they were saying that there were two different scenes. It was LeBron after losing to the Suns and LeBron after beating the Suns. And when LeBron lost to the Suns, he just dipped. And when LeBron beat the Suns, he's all smiles, dapping sure. it up yeah. with KD. Would that be better? Right? Do we not
I mean,
care
after
about,
a win, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we not care about sportsmanship anymore? Right. I don't know if I do or not. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I guess it's not necessary. It's just kind of a thing that I don't. It's also just like, I don't know, these guys are real people. And like, you know, just because they're on different teams doesn't mean that their paths haven't crossed before in the past. And I don't really have an issue with it. I understand why people, like, especially after losses, immediately, you know, see them dapping each other up. But also, I would say in general, basketball feels like a different kind of game, too, where it's a little bit less, not serious, but I don't know, something about football, just it feels like there's a lot more animosity, and obviously it's a much more physical game, and something about, I don't know, maybe that could just be my own prejudices coming into effect, but it feels like, to me, it makes more sense in basketball, where it's a little bit less, it just feels a little bit less serious. I don't know, it feels like maybe it's just I have the understanding more so that these guys, you know, co-mingle with between each other, but I don't know. It, to me, doesn't feel as bad.
I think situation matters, and this is a playoff game, and I'm not going to compare that to a regular season basketball game. I know when I was still in the Bay and the Warriors lost to the Lakers, Draymond got ripped because right after the game, he was dapping it up with LeBron right. and smiling.
Yeah.
And people hated that. Sure. And I got that. I understood that. But a regular season game is an 82-game season. You say what's up, you say goodbye to somebody. That's different. Now, after a playoff series, if you saw De'Aaron Fox chumming it up with Steph right after, and I don't know if that happened or not. It probably did.
It definitely did.
It probably did. Yeah. I could see how you as a fan, which is short for fanatic, feel some type of way, is very invested. And that might make you feel some type of way because you're ticked off.
Sure.
And then you get reminded, hey, these guys got a pretty good life.
Right.
I hate to go there, especially on a sports talk show.
Sure.
But
De'Aaron told us, he just moves on.
Yeah,
the second he leaves the arena,
life,
it's like,
right? I'm not saying they don't care.
Right.
But I'm saying, you know, you've had LeBron and some people say, you can hate on me, you got to go back to your life.
Right.
So I could understand why that would probably just annoy people even more.
Sure.
But to me, what Tua did was worse. Because you're coming off as a fan.
It was big fan.
Right?
And yeah, maybe it was like that specific situation. It just felt super fanny. It felt like he was fanboying over Patrick Mahomes.
So that's why that's the difference to me. And I would say situation. If you want to feel like that, dapping it up and smiling after a hard-fought playoff series, I can hear you on that. But then at the same time, to the 916 or whoever else feels like that, then I guess we're done with sportsmanship, which I don't necessarily have a problem with.
Yeah, that's it. I haven't thought of it from that angle, but that is that does bring up an interesting point of, like, is that all just kind of for show anyway? Like, do we need that part of the game?
I mean, just leave.
Just leave, yeah. Just walk off the floor. Like, is it really disrespectful to just not dap up your opponent? Because, again, you'll see those guys, especially in a playoff series, you'll see them again in 2 days or something. Right. Like, is it really that disrespectful? I don't know. Yeah, I haven't. It's not really been something that I've thought about before.
That's a good question, because I'm thinking off the top of my head, it does feel like in playoff series. Because
in baseball, they don't dap up at the end of games. They dap up maybe at the end of the series.
I don't think they dap up at all.
Really?
In baseball. Yeah. I don't think they dap up at all.
See, that's interesting. Yeah,
but
I don't know.
In basketball, I feel like they don't really dap up during a playoff series. Maybe it's not forced. Then it's a big dap up at the end of the series.
It's a huge dap up at the end of the series. That's when the jersey swaps happen. Right. That's when, like, guys are out there for 10 minutes talking with each other about
it. And again, it is also tougher to compare, because in basketball, you've at least played 4 games.
Right.
So would you be mad at, I guess, De'Aaron if the Kings get swept? And he didn't play well. That's
swept
a lot different
tough.
Than a one
swept
game. You had one game, right? At least you could
even
say.
Even like in a 7-game series, it's like, hey, we earned so
saying.
Much respect
that's
for each
I'm
other
saying.
Throughout
that's
these
what I'm
games.
Saying. But a one-game playoff series, Tua, I mean, I blinked and you were out of the playoffs. and now you're asking for a jersey. You honestly, Tua, you didn't earn a Patrick Mahomes jersey.
Right.
You did it. You didn't even earn a Patrick Mahomes jersey. That's my problem with it. So, yeah, no. But I hear you 916 in a way, but at the same time, I think it's a little bit different. If we're just assuming you're talking playoffs, I get it. But again, even 4 games, you're back and forth. You're in their city, they're in your city.
Yeah.
That's still the course of at least if you get swept, that's still going to take over a week.
Right.
So, you know, you've been through some things. Even if you got swept, there probably was a couple close games in there. One game, I mean, like I said, Tua. You know what I mean? My baby literally took a nap, and you were in and out of the playoffs.
Right.
That's how short your stint was.
And again, it's not even like they were going, like, it's not like, I don't know, Micah Parsons or Jordan Love asking for Micah Parsons jersey or something, where it's like, hey, that's a real mano a mano situation where, again, it can be a game respect game thing. To me, it's Tua almost idolizing Patrick Mahomes and saying, oh my gosh, I just got a front row seat to see this guy put on a masterclass.
Yeah.
I've got to get some sort of, let me take a piece of confetti off the field. Oh, and it's like, come on, man. I don't know. It came off really bad from Tua.
Yeah, I didn't like it. Also have, before we get to a break here, some new news on the A's that has been circulating. And the A's, man, I mean, talk about a bad look.
It's terrible.
So there's a little chance that they will play in the Coliseum after 2024. Okay. They have Sacramento as a backup plan for 2025.
A's.
I mean, I'll go to the games. Don't get me wrong. It's too close.
You're
going to
cross the picket fence?
That's the question. But I like baseball.
So I don't think you were here when, like, the throes of the A's moving to Vegas was happening. Because that was really the big thing, is, like, you're in Sacramento and the A's are already gone. Is it crossing the picket fence, or is it, hey, this situation's already handled. Like, this is available. I'm going to go because this is possibly a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Like, do you see anything potentially wrong with, I mean, you know, maybe some diehard A's supporters might say, don't put any money in their pockets. Don't help them with this moving process. Why would Sacramento aid the A's in trying to move out, make it as difficult as possible? The argument is that's their fault. And, like, why should Sacramento as a market help these guys move out of the Bay Area, Northern California, when, you know, they've done nothing but, I mean, you know, they've done nothing but be terrible to the area.
Well,
that's just the
right.
I mean, I think if you're a Sacramento baseball fan, totally makes sense to me to go to a Sacramento baseball game.
But I get that. And by the way, still no public renderings or actual financing plan.
Good
for
luck. I think
Vegas.
I think that's due today.
I get that, but the thing is, the bridge has already been burned.
Exactly. That's all.
And I'm not even saying I see both sides of it, but the bridge has already been burned. If you're Sacramento, hey, you know, you give some people some jobs, you get an opportunity for
one
to
last
see some
opportunity
baseball.
Too.
Exactly.
For A's fans.
Exactly. They got to play somewhere. So why not allow it to be in Sacramento? I get it if there was still an opportunity to save this thing. But that bridge has already been burned. If, they, if we were still in the throes of it, then sure. But the bridge has already been burned. At least you get to, you know, we know Sacramento has a ton of A's fans from back in the day when they were bringing in, you know, trying to up their ticket sales and things like that. So let everybody see the A's before they do move on. That's how I look at it. So
I can't believe the Giants are allowing it. That's the one thing that I still am, have. Well, I haven't heard confirmation on it, but the Giants, as we know, have been probably the A's least their biggest adversary to moving.
But like they did all that.
Or I guess biggest proponent for them moving, I should say.
Right, but yeah, they did all that. They said, oh my gosh,
I guess in a way,
tough.
If it helps them move out, they're like yeah, now, sure, go ahead. You can rent our space if it means y'all can go.
Yeah, some of you A's fans are going to come crawling. But hey, oh, you know, it's so bad for the city of Oakland. That's what the Giants put out. And then they did not even vote against moving the A's when it was unanimous, meaning that the A's did not need that, or the, you know, Major League Baseball did not need the Giants' vote, so they could have did this in solidarity.
Totally.
To
could
Oakland
have been 29-1.
So once they did that, I'm thinking, okay, well, you might as well get some money. You know, it is a business.
For sure.
And not to say I like it, but, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to watch baseball. All right, got to get to a break. We see you on the line, Mike and Steven, wanting to talk about sportsmanship. And I think it's a really good conversation. So we're going to take those calls. And after that, we will get started. How important is the game tonight? I'll tell you what, Chris and I don't agree on how important the game is tonight. We'll get into it. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.